From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour will be made with voters in Wayne County and in the town of Webster in Monroe County, who will cast their ballots for New York State Assembly this election season. They will see two names on the ballot for Assembly District number 130. The Republican, the incumbent, is Brian Mangtalo. The Democrat is James Shuler. And just a note to our listeners that for all of these candidate conversations on Connections, we are listing candidates in the order that they appear on the Monroe County Board of Elections candidate list. So I think it's James Shuler, Brian Mangtalo. There you go. We always prefer when candidates in the same race agree to sit down together. We're happy to say that this is the case today with our guests. It's nice to have both of them here. Brian Mangtalo, who is the incumbent and a candidate for a fourth term in the New York State Assembly in District number 130. We've talked to you on the phone, on Zoom in the past. It's nice to see you in person. Thank you for being here, Brian.
Well, thank you, Evan, and it's great to be here. As I said earlier, in person is great.
Very good to have James Shuler as well, candidate for New York State Assembly in District number 130. Thank you for making time for us as well.
And thank you for having me also.
Well, we always ask our listeners, if they want, our guests, if they want to introduce themselves. And I want to tell our listeners here that this race and really everything that we're covering, you're going to see in the WXXI election guide. So this is an important resource for you. If you are trying to figure out, you know, who are my candidates in New York State Senate, New York State Assembly, different races at different levels, where do they stand on the issues? Have they been on Connections? Go to the WXXI election guide, and you can easily find it at WXXINews.org and scrolling to the blue local elections guide section right in the middle of the page, the local elections guide section right in the middle of the page. We always add these conversations there. Brian, I'll start with you. You are running for term number four. For listeners who are not yet all that familiar with you, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself and why you would like a fourth term in the New York State Assembly?
Sure. Absolutely, Evan. Thank you again for having us on. I'm running for my fourth term here. I serve in Albany. I serve on the Ways and Means Committee. I'm the ranking member on the Veterans Committee, also serving on Energy, Local Governments, and the NCON Committee, having a background of public service plus private business plus farming plus being a veteran brings me to the forefront, understanding and having the knowledge to know where to go and understand what's happening right away helps me bring that forward. And working in Albany, having built the relationships there on both sides of the aisle, able to accomplish things and make it happen, especially in our area where the one size fits all for New York State doesn't work. And I'm really all about just common sense legislation, common sense government.
And tell them a little bit about your work background. You mentioned it briefly here, but your work history pre-Albany.
Yeah, pre-Albany, I was a U.S. Army veteran in the 1st Armored Division, came back home, started Mangtalo Farms, a 4,000-acre field crop operation, and at the same time got very involved in local government, being a former town supervisor and then a former town board member, then town supervisor for 9 years, as well as a Wayne County Board of Supervisors as well at the same time.
And how long your U.S. Army service?
6 years, sir.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for being here. Same question now, James Shuler. The floor is yours to introduce yourself and let listeners know not only a little bit about yourself, but why you're running for this seat.
Well, I'm going to start with introducing myself. I'm from Palmyra. I live in Palmyra, New York, with my wife and my two dogs. I have three children. One of my daughters live here in Rochester and two live in Lyons. I have four grandchildren. One is a senior, one's a junior, and a third grader and a kindergartner. Currently, I'm Assistant Director of Youth Advocate Programs for Wayne County. I've been there for, we joke around and laugh, say 15 years, because it feels like 15, but it's been roughly 12 years there doing work, started as frontline advocate, working with young youth and families around the county of Monroe, and then transitioned back out to Wayne. The reason I'm running is I've been working with young people and families in both Wayne County and Monroe County for quite some time now, and I've seen everybody receiving, and Wayne County has been just suffering. We've been going, a lot of the towns are going down, a lot of the villages are being dissolved, and crime is starting to pick up. we're starting to see a lot of issues in our communities, and I've seen other places getting help, and I haven't seen that help in the same format coming to our area. So sitting on the committees and sitting with the different people in Albany and seeing the work that's being done and that's being handed out all around us, one of the things that I said, well, I need to get involved so we can have that voice and that seat at the table where we're actually putting forth ideas and things that can affect and bring about a change to us here in Wayne County and Webster.
James, we're going to touch on some of the issues that you just brought up throughout this hour. Let me just also follow up on one point on your own resume. When you talk about youth services, what are the kinds of programs or youth services that you're involved with in Wayne County?
Well, I created the Wayne County My Brother's Keeper program, which serves African-American and Puerto Rican young men to help them make better choices and changes in their lives and give them the opportunity to see things other than sports. Give them an opportunity to try different ideas and close achievement gaps. I've created the Wayne County Unity Festival, which is now in its fourth year, which was I put it together for the sole purpose of bringing the leadership out and in nonprofits and different vendors and crafters out so the community can come together and have a good time and get to know each other. And I did this in a time, I started this because in 2020, as we know, there was a lot of division that was going on within our communities. And I wanted to give our leaders, our nonprofits, and our community the opportunity to get together to know each other. So I created the Unity Festival. The young people I work with range from severely disabled to just behavioral issues. My agency, we provide one of the we're one of the largest services for the Wayne County area in the area of diversion. We do a lot of diversion work. Right now I work in schools across the county. I'm in Newark School District all day, every day, helping out there. And my team, we're all over. We're in Wilcott and all the different schools in Wayne County. We just all around help people and see the issues that they have and help them through those issues.
Well, these two candidates here together are on the ballot for District number 130 in the New York State Assembly. And you heard James talk a little bit about what I presume would be toward the top of his priority list, why he's running. He sees a district, at least especially in Wayne County, where he sees a lot of economic decay, concerns he has there. Brian Mangtalo, I want to ask you, as the incumbent, what is priority one for you? What has been your priority in Albany? And I don't know if that's a fair question. Is there a priority one that stands out for you?
Evan, I don't think there's a priority one. I think there's so many different priorities. You know, as we look across the whole state and we look at the funding process that comes out of Albany, you know, being a former farmer and businessman, I can look at that aspect. But some of the priorities that I see right off the bat is, you know, taking care of our senior citizens, priority number one. Taking care of individuals with disabilities, priority number two. Looking at our young people throughout the schools, priority number three. And why I have that in that order is that's where the needs are right now. That's what we're hearing from the public. You know, what are we going to do? How can we afford to stay here? Especially some of our senior citizens, talking with them with the increased cost of electricity, the increased cost of food, the increased cost of living in New York State. They're concerned about how am I going to afford to be here? And then looking at all the different taxes that we all pay, especially school taxes, which is one of the highest ones. And that's what I hear from my constituents. But even today, I just spent 3 hours in one of our local schools out in Wayne County talking with the teachers, meeting with the students, understanding what's important to them. And school's a big part of their life.
Assemblymember, when it comes to the health of the district, your opponent in this race sees a district that is really struggling. Do you see it the same way? Is it a district that's economically struggling, that villages are in trouble? Do you see that?
I think the biggest struggle we see across the district, across the state, is definitely mental health. That's one of the forefronts that we're looking at in Albany, because mental health seems to be at the high point. Ever since COVID hit, as a former veteran, seeing that through our veterans as well, mental health is by far the number one need that we see across the district as a new type of a health situation.
Okay, so on that note then, let me ask James Shuler, would you make that same kind of assessment about the district, that mental health is at the top? Would you describe it differently? How would you describe the health of the district that you're running for?
I think the issue that I see in our district is more so we're not at the table, really. We're not in the conversation. We're not
in Albany?
In Albany. We're just not in the conversations. When the people of Albany sit down and they talk about what needs to happen, Wayne County is as far as on their mind.
So describe then for me, if you're elected, mm-hmm. you'd be joining what is likely to continue to be a Democratic majority, although you never know. We've been saying all election season, California used to be a red state. Texas was a blue state. That was 1976. Very different map. You never know. Things could change. But you might be joining a Democratic majority. What would be the plan then to change the dynamic that you just described?
Well, I'm going to give you one example I have is I'm looking at Ridge Road. And Ridge Road starts at Bay Road in Webster, and it runs all the way down through Wayne County. And as you travel down through Ridge Road, you see towns that's in decay. And they're getting worse and worse and worse as we travel. One of my priorities is first is let's figure out a way to help those small towns, those micro businesses, do better and receive what they need so they can provide for our community. We have communities in our county that they're food deserts. They don't have grocery stores, and people and elderly have to figure out how they're going to get to the grocery store when the grocery store right around the corner from them has just closed. And the one on across the town just closed.
But can Albany change that?
Well, we can put forth ideas that help. We can come up with funding that can help. We can put forth. I sit back and I see in Wayne County, one of the things I see happen a lot is a lot of grants, a lot of grant applications being put out, a lot of funding coming through for startup projects. I mean, there's ideas that exist. And like I remember once upon a time here in Rochester, they had like a community grocery store. Why can't we do something similar to that? We are the farm community of the state, basically. Why can't we have community grocery stores where the community is investing into? We got farmers that got all types of different foods and vegetables. We can very well help our own selves with some assistance from the state.
Brian, he's describing a district that doesn't really have a seat at the table in Albany. Is that fair?
Absolutely not. We definitely have a seat at the table. You know, being an agricultural county, an agricultural district, one of the biggest things that we've pushed is our local farmers markets, having the ability to get food to people with lower incomes, having them have the ability to go to a farmers market with a card, get some of those fresh vegetables and fruits and everything. And by doing that, that's something that was pushed through Albany, having our homegrown food stay in New York State, being available to our citizens and to our schools. Secondly, a lot of the funding that we see across Wayne County and as well as Webster in the village, we have DRI funding. We have different fundings for helping the main streets. Those have all been implemented. The governor was just out here last year. We met in MCC. The village of Webster got $1.5 million. Massillon got the same amount of money to help develop the downtown areas along the streets. And the other push that we're doing through Albany is looking at the funding for our state DOT, because as Mr. Schuller said, the roads, the infrastructure along some of our state roads are tough, and we are providing more and more funding. For the first time since I've been in office, our local DOT offices and centers out throughout Wayne County are fully staffed right now, and we haven't seen that in years. So we are moving forward.
Again, this is a district that is Wayne County, all of Wayne County, and the town of Webster. And town of Webster's got plenty of area too. And it is a more rural county district. And it is a district that, you know, it's probably seen change in its job base just like any other district. But I want to ask, and I'll start with Brian on this question, what is the strength of the job base in your district? And what is the likely or the ideal economic driver in the future in your district?
Well, right now, let's talk about Webster. You know, that's the furthest west we go, closest to Monroe County, in Monroe County. Mm-hmm. But one of the huge things that we did accomplish is Fairlife Milk coming to Webster, which will support all of our agriculture throughout the area, the Finger Lakes area, but also the amount of jobs that will come into play. Plus, we have all the vacant Xerox buildings, and working with the town, the village, and Monroe County, making sure we get those vacant buildings filled. We are in the process of doing that and moving forward. When Fairlife came in, Governor played a huge part as well. Making that happen in upstate New York is a huge thing. When I'm in Albany, talking with my representatives, fellow representatives from across the state, both sides of the aisle, well, how'd you guys get that there? How'd you get Fairlife in upstate New York? We worked hard with the governor's office to make that happen. That's just one small piece. Jobs, well-paying jobs, and families will grow. So that's a great accomplishment. We are at the table. We are fighting for that. Another one, looking at Duffy Mott's or Mott's, Applesauce, Keurig, Dr. Pepper. We are now in the process. We had the commissioner up of Ag a few weeks ago, making sure that applesauce is going down to New York City. Right now, New York City applesauce comes from Michigan. We are fighting that process, making sure our local apples and our local growers put their product in New York State, and the governor's big on that. We're big on that on both sides of the aisle of using our products here in New York State first. And as I just said a little bit ago, our farmers markets are doing an outstanding job, far better now than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, even 20 years ago. I am very proud of what they do.
James, how do you see the economic driver right now, and what does a healthy future for your district look like?
Well, I will agree with Brian on one area where the farmers markets are doing very well. However, the issue is they're temporary. They're not long term. In the wintertime, there's no farmers market. So then, which we all know in Wayne County and New York State area, there's more cold days than there is hot days. There's more snowy days than there is warm days where people can actually go and walk to a farmer's market or a farmer's market can be set up. So we need something that people can go to on a continual basis, something that we can have over and over and over again where families can go through. As far as economics and jobs go, the job is only a part of the problem. I see we create jobs, but then there's no place for the people to shop, so the businesses still suffer because we create a lot of jobs, and then the money that those jobs create actually go get spent in other counties and other areas outside of Wayne County. We need to create things so that when we create the jobs in Wayne County, the money can stay in Wayne County, because right now the money comes to Wayne County, and it comes like it's almost like a, for the lack of a better phrase, it's almost like money laundering scheme where the money comes into us, but then we take it someplace else to go spend it. We need things that keep the money to us in Wayne County. And the only way we're going to do that is we have the business ventures and support the local businesses that we have now. One of my main focuses is going to be on the micro businesses, the mom and pop stores, those small businesses that have under 10 people and they don't make over $1 million. We need to help those people grow to become small businesses so that they can help fuel the economy and help their families and others in the community can say, you know what, there is hope for us here in Wayne County because we have businesses, we have things we can do, and others in surrounding counties can say, hey, you know what I want to do? I want to go to Wayne County and shop over Wayne County because they have things in Wayne County now. Instead of it being, we have money, we have jobs, but we got to go other places to get what we need.
Brian, are you concerned that money has flown outside of the county and the district?
I think we see that flow on both sides of the aisle. I think people come from Monroe County that come out to our local farm stands, our farm businesses, our tourist spots, our ski slopes, and spend money in Wayne County. I know in Sodus Point, down the Sodus Point area, a lot of people come there from outside the state, from outside our county, to spend the week or weekends.
So you think the balance is healthier than maybe your opponent is describing?
It's definitely healthier. Can it always improve? Absolutely, on both sides of the aisle. But what we're seeing is now, with all the safety issues in Monroe County, we've seen a little bit of an out-migration of people coming into Wayne County, especially on the western side of the county, living there, buying a home there. Their students go to, their children go to school there. Their services are there. The hospitals are there. We are seeing that growth from the state level. We're seeing that growth from the county level as well. You know, being on the Board of Supervisors for 9 years, understanding Wayne County and looking at it totally across the board, we are seeing that growth. We're seeing new houses going up, condominiums, everything across the western side of the county moving east, and that's what we see.
We're talking to the candidates for Assembly District number 130, Brian Mangtalo, the Republican, the incumbent, running for a fourth term. James Shuler, the Democrat, is the challenger in this race. And in our show notes, we will link to their online presences, Facebook, internet, etc., if you want to learn more about the candidates there. You can also go to the WXXI News Election Guide, WXXINews.org, and you find the blue local elections guide section right there in the middle of the page. When it comes to what you've been able to do so far in three terms, Assemblyman Mangtalo, one of the accomplishments that you note is a bill relating to the establishing the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Can we talk about that? And I want to say that the last time I think you were on this program, you were very passionate about abortion. I know it's an issue that matters very much to you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this act and how you see the state of abortion in this state?
Well, I think what we've learned in the last few years across the board, meeting with different individuals, just for instance, this past weekend, I had the opportunity to meet with a young woman that had three abortions. And what I'm learning is We can talk about abortion, but we can also talk about the health of these women and the men that are involved in this and making sure from the state level that we have the programs out there so if someone so chooses to have an abortion, that we don't forget about them, that we show them the love and kindness that they still deserve whether they abort or not, because they still are a human being. And making sure that we have programs where they can come and say, 2 years down the road, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. This woman that I spoke with this past weekend, this happened many, many years ago, and she said it never goes away. And I want to make sure that we have things in place to help these individuals get through their life as they move forward.
Have your own views on abortion evolved or changed in recent years?
No, I'm still very pro-life.
Mm-hmm. And so if there is a future legislative majority for Republicans, you would vote for more significant changes to the abortion laws?
Well, as you said earlier, right now the majority is down there. I don't forever seeing that in my lifetime. I hope so, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. Plus,
okay.
It's already in law.
I certainly understand that, but you would vote for more restrictions if possible on abortion.
I'm not saying more restrictions. I think that government should stay out of abortion. I think it's more on the individuals. In this state, we have abortion. There's nothing different that I can change at this point. If it, you know, let's go back to what I said earlier. Common sense legislation. Let's look at what we have on the books and let's listen to the people that are actually living those lives, not a government official, not a radio host, someone that's actually been through the process, husband, wife, family, and let them tell us what they need. That's the piece that's missing, that common sense.
Government officials and radio hosts are people too, Brian.
I know we are.
One other question for you, before I turn to your opponent in the race on this. Yesterday, a Republican candidate, Luis Martinez, was on this program, who's also running for, he's running for New York State Senate, I should say. He's challenging Summer Brook. He's a Republican, and he said that his belief is that if there was more support for women and, in some cases, girls who've been impregnated, that no one would choose abortion if there was more support. If the society was better suited to support having kids, parenthood, even young parenthood, that we would not see anybody choose abortion. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm not saying 100%, but I think the level would be high. Because, and why I agree with that is the numbers show if you take a young person that's pregnant and you take them in and let them have an ultrasound and they see that baby, they see that heartbeat, it's like 85 or 90% of them choose to continue to keep that child.
So what are the kind of social net, safety net supports then that you would favor expanding?
Well, I think they have to have the ability to actually have some help. We're talking about some of the very youngest people we know, making sure that they have both sides of the understanding of whether you should keep the baby or not keep the baby. I think they need to be allowed to have those options and show them what it's all about and be there with them. Never let them go because they're very vulnerable. A lot of them are very young, and we need to make sure we take care of them long term, whether they choose to keep the baby or not. We have a responsibility as a society to love that individual, right or wrong, whether you believe in it or you don't believe in it. What I do believe is we need to take care of that mother.
But I guess I'm just wondering what actual tangible forms of social safety net that you might vote for. I mean, typically, not to overgeneralize, but typically Democrats favor more of an expansion of social safety net. Republicans favor less so. You're describing wanting more support for having babies, for caring to term, for young mothers. What specifically would the state invest in?
Well, we can invest very simply. Let's look at foster care. Let's look at adoption. And you and I have talked about this. A lot of people that know me know that I've adopted two kids. And I am so thankful that those two women that chose to keep those children didn't abort those babies, because did I ever meet them? Absolutely not, the mothers. But I see those mothers in my children's eyes every time I see them. And if it wasn't for that option, I may not have a family today.
Adoption can be expensive.
It can be, but it doesn't have to be. When I did my adoption, we went through our local social services in Wayne County, and basically we had the cost of hiring the attorney to make all the papers legal, but everything is at a cost.
When it comes to abortion, James Shuler, where are you on this issue?
Very, 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 very simple. I think that's between the parents and the doctor. I don't think government has a play in there except for setting basic limitations on how long the term should be before you can have it. before you can have an abortion. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't think that it's the government's place to sit back and tell a person that what they should or they shouldn't do with their body.
I suppose then that as a Democrat in a state that has established laws, is there nothing that you would change then about the current state of abortion law in this state?
No.
Shorter set of answers from James. Brian, I don't want to let this pass also. If you wanted to talk about A03601, that's the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Anything you want to add on that?
No.
Okay. James?
I would say that as far as I looked at the bill. I've checked it out. I've listened to the previous show when he was on and everything about it. And I don't think that the bill is necessary. I really don't. I don't think it's a necessary bill. I don't think it's something that we should be even sitting back trying to figure out how do we do it. How do we do this? And wasting time in Albany with, because for one, it's the right of the parents. And if a parent in today's time wants to have an abortion, I think it's their right to choose. Now, as far as this bill that's going to restrict anything, I don't think that, I don't think that we need to go down that road. I think that as far as like the services and so forth that Mr. Mantello is talking about implementing for the young, for people who are having, who wants to have abortion or don't want to or confused or however it goes, I think that when we sit back and look at it, this is 2024. And we're moving forward. We're more progressive. Young people are making more choices. They're more social. They're thinking about when they want to have their families later in life. And there things happen. And people need to be able to say, you know what? If I'm not ready to be a parent, I don't think I should be forced into being a parent right now. I made a decision, and this decision I'm going to take. I'm going to move forward.
But James, I don't want people to be confused about the bill that you're talking about. This is not my expertise. I'm just going to read from what I think is just copied from state legislative information on this. A03601 amends the public health law to add a new section to establish the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. This section would require any healthcare practitioner present at the time a child is born alive during an abortion or attempted abortion procedure to exercise the same degree or care to preserve the life and health of the child as a reasonably diligent and conscientious healthcare practitioner would render to any other child born alive at the same gestational age, and ensure the child born alive is immediately transported and admitted to the hospital. End quote. I mean, there's a couple things that come to mind here. First of all, we don't have a situation where a healthy child who comes into this world is then allowed to just be killed on the table in the doctor's office. That's not what we typically, not there is a typical, but if there is ever a situation where an abortion is happening, my understanding and having talked to many providers is what is happening in rare cases is an abortion is carried out. What ends up happening is there is a dying, essentially a dying child, a suffering child. And the decision of the medical team is not to hook every machine and drug into a dying child to try to preserve 10 hours or 10 days of life when that child is dying, to allow a dignified and pain-free situation. That is different than the idea that the child is born and could healthily survive and could live. And the doctor's going, well, you didn't want the baby, right? So I guess we're just going to kill it. I don't know. I don't think that's... I've never heard that is actually happening, but it's Assemblyman Mantello, do you understand it differently?
Well, I mean, you just read the bill that I moved forward.
Yeah.
So what you're telling me then is if someone's having an abortion, the baby comes out, the baby's alive on the table, at that point in time, does that baby not have the right to live?
I don't think that we're in a situation where a healthy baby that survives an abortion procedure is then killed. I don't think that's what, according to the many providers I talk to, they've never seen that one time. What they describe is the abortion procedure happens, that child is dying because of the abortion procedure that happened, and that there is a essentially a team decision to, with dignity, allow the child not to suffer as it's dying. Is that different than you understand it?
Well, what you just said is a team. Who is the team?
Doctor and parent, doctor and mother.
Oh, so it's the doctor and the parent, not a team. Because when you said team, I think of a team as the doctors and the nurses sitting around the table trying to make the decision.
I've never been in this situation.
I have not either.
Okay, so this is not my expertise. I'm only relaying what abortion providers have told me.
And I know that it's my understanding when there's abortion, the father is not there. So I don't know who would make that decision, just the mom or the father and the mother, the team, as you said. What is that team, and how do we say what the team is?
Okay, James, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I work in schools, and I work in the community where the concept of team that we're talking about here is well defined and really clear. We have professionals, and when we're talking about services to families, the family is part of the team. I've talked to my wife about this, and I've talked to others. I agree with you there, and I agree with the professionals. I haven't heard, and I did research. I did the AIs and all types of different things to try to find information, and I haven't come across one case where in New York State where an abortion was that type of unsuccessful, where we have
a child that's just born and is still alive. And could thrive.
It happens, from my understanding, and I'm not a doctor, so I could be way off on this, but from my understanding, the abortion happens way before it's even to that point where we have a living, breathing, conceivable, and sustainable child.
But James, do you agree with your opponent that if there's a child who survives an abortion procedure, is born into the world, and could thrive, it should be illegal to end that child's life?
The question is if it's able to survive, and with the
I'm giving you the hypothetical that your opponent is given. If that child can survive, should it be illegal to end that child's life?
If it could survive, yes.
Okay, you agree on that.
If it could survive, but I want to point this out. I think it's very important for listeners to know that I think it's highly unlikely.
I've never heard of it happening once, but you're saying that if it did, you would agree with him.
Yeah, if it did, but I need to see the data.
The difference is, in this situation, we're talking about possible murder charges. The bill calls for murder charges if the child then dies after that situation. And again, what I need to know, I guess, Assemblyman Mangtulo, is if there is a child that is born, brought out of the mother after an abortion procedure, is dying, and is not given everything to try to extend the life, even if the doctors say it's could be an agonizing few hours, is that doctor going to be charged with murder?
Well, you answered the question. If dying, you look at every oath that a doctor takes. Their job is to save a life. So why would you not make the decision to try to save that life and not make the decision if dying? Because who actually knows if that baby is dying or is not dying?
Well, I mean, I think the doctors are pretty good with that, don't you?
Then why would they have to bring in a team to make that decision?
When I said team, I'm just talking about the parents, the doctor, whoever is involved in making a decision about the care of the mother in that situation. And I want to move off this because I just wanted to understand this as best I can here. But in your situation, we're talking about actual murder charges, and I'm just not aware of doctors saying, hey, we screwed up that abortion, but don't worry, we'll just kill this child now. I've never heard of that. Have you heard of that? I'm just trying to be clear. I don't think your opponent disagrees with you that if that happened, that should probably result in something severe.
If this was a perfect world,
yeah. Kevin,
what you're telling me is every child that is aborted and is pulled out of the womb, that it's going to automatically die. So are you saying 100% sure that there's never a chance that that child could live?
I have no idea if that has happened. I'm open to any evidence. Sure.
As well as I am.
Okay. Let's move off that. James, you got your hand up.
I just want to make sure that it's really clear that the sentencing part of this whole thing, I totally disagree with. The most listeners, those who don't know about me, I've been to prison. I did time in prison, and a manslaughter, a murder charge for a doctor, for something like that, a bill on the table, a law on the table for such a thing is extreme. It's extreme. It's unnecessary. I will never support such an idea.
All right, let's move off that issue. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Brian Mangthalo, who is running for re-election in New York State Assembly District number 130. That covers all of Wayne County and the town of Webster. He is the Republican in the race. The Democrat is James Shuler, who is also with us, the candidate in District number 130. An issue in every race that I've talked to candidates is public safety. And Assemblyman Mangthalo, how would you assess public safety in your district first and foremost here?
Public safety in 130th Assembly District. I think our police officers, our first responders, our judges do a remarkable job. I think when bail reform was brought forward, without having the judges at the table, without having our policing agencies at the table, whether it's district attorney, whether it's public defenders, they should have all been at the table, because I still believe that it's an issue. And why is it still...
Bail reform is what you're saying.
Well, all of it together. Bail reform... the way the laws are, taking away the judges' rights to make some decisions that they need to make because of bail reform, knowing a frequent flyer, and because the law says, oh, they're out today. And look at here in Monroe County, what, a month ago, the older gentleman that was killed by a young man with a car who had already hijacked cars several times in a row. You walk through Walmart, and now you have Legos that are all locked up because of... people stealing everything. In a rural Walmart in Wayne County, we have to have things locked up because there are no more consequences, partially because of bail reform, the way it was rolled out, and as I said, not having the players at the table. And what we're seeing is these frequent flyers, there's really nothing that they can do to help them. And then when someone does a crime and they're automatically released 2 hours later, they can do it again. But when they were in jail for a while, we were able to get them help. We were able to get them mental health, counseling, speaking to these young people. But if you bring them in and then they automatically go right back out, then they're back on their own again. And we see this, whether it's stealing, whether it's drugs. And as Mr. Shuler says, he's involved with young people as much as I am. And our job is to help these young people. And because of what we're seeing here with the changes... In Albany, this is what happens. We come up with all these new laws, and oh, by the way, we'll fix them later, and we go to the extremes too fast. We saw that with recreational marijuana. How many of these facilities just sprouted up? Well, you can't do nothing against me. We're going to sell it anyways. And then we finally changed the laws. We gave the cannabis board, more power to take some of these illegal sales out, because what happened was... All these people that are doing black market stuff behind the scenes were growing and evolving, and that's not what it was all about, and that's what we talked about. So again, we don't always bring the right people to the table, and that needs to be done.
So more discretion for judges. When we talk to, and I don't want to make a blanket statement on police, and I've said this before, but a number of sheriffs, police chiefs have come out against bail reform or have said that they want to see more discretion for judges. They want to see a dangerousness standard reimposed, essentially. Those are all things that you would support.
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. What are you hearing from law enforcement when you talk to law enforcement, for example, in Wayne County?
About those same
things? Or, I mean, again, the district covers part of Monroe County, so Sheriff Baxter as well. But when you, in Monroe County, but when you talk to law enforcement, whether it's Monroe County, Wayne County, what are you hearing about dangerousness, judicial discretion, bail reform?
Same things I just told you. Our police officers are frustrated because we're constantly getting these frequent flyers that constantly play the system, and we're not able to get them help because they're back out on the streets. And what are we doing for these young people? Just saying, okay, it's okay. It's okay. We have places, I know, talking to businesses that tell their employees, look, if so-and-so comes in and steals that off the shelf, don't call the cops. Don't get involved with them. Just let them walk out the door. Well, that's not a right way of society. And it's frustrating our police officers. You talk about the health of individuals. Look what our police officers do. Look what they go against. Look what our teachers are up against. And these people are involved in this every single day. Why would we not want to repeal back the bail reform, make it something that's doable, and even more so, safe for the children or these young people?
All right, James, what do you make of public safety and some of what Brian just said there?
Where do I start here? Let's talk about. I want to talk about the part where people being at the table in the beginning. That's a constant thing I hear a lot. Is when, especially around the bail reform, we didn't have people at the table. Well, I said before that I go to Albany quite a bit, and I go there for different reasons. One time I was in Albany, they had before bail reform was passed, they had in this huge room, they had a panel in there. And on that panel, they had judges, they had district attorneys, they had lawyers, they had a whole bunch of different people, and they were debating back and forth on bail reform, how it should look, what it should have happened. And there was a variety of different political persuasions on that committee. I'm in the room. Granted, we can't have every district attorney in New York State at the table. We can't have every judge in New York State at the table. But there were judges and district attorneys and lawyers at the table when this bail reform was being lobbied and hashed around in different committees. I was present for a lot of them. And so for them to continue to say that they were absent, no, maybe they weren't absent. But, maybe others were.
But clearly, law enforcement, and again, it's not a monolith. I'm sure there's some disagreement, but yes. Law enforcement generally does not favor those changes,
no.
And would like to see some of the changes that Assemblyman Mangalow is talking about. Do you disagree with that?
I agree that law enforcement would like to see that, but one of the issues that I see is I call it the nail and hammer approach. When your only tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And you just start whacking away. There's different ways to. New Zealand has restorative justice, and they've done a lot of with violence in New Zealand. They've got a huge. They've made some big changes in New Zealand with how they do crime and punishment.
So, but James, let me on that point. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you two separate things, and part of this is really a question for both of the candidates. What Brian is talking about is not just, from what I'm hearing, not just hey, arrest somebody and lock them up, no bail, never, no trial. He's saying, if the system is better, then you can get help to people who need it, and you get them off the track of recidivism, and that a more effective system would allow for more judicial discretion, but also more intervention mm-hmm. in their lives. And intervention is a big part of the work that you do. Mm-hmm. Do you agree or disagree with that? I mean, is there a way to do that?
Every Thursday of my life for the last 7 years, I've been going in and out of Wayne County Jail, working with. I started out with young people, and then after they raised the age, then I started working with the adults in the jail. So every Thursday, I'm in jail and I'm doing the work with the people that's in there. Having done time myself, one thing that I do know is that there's a myth that there's all these services and all this help for individuals in jail. I didn't see it like that when I was in there. In county jails, you sit in a cell, you sit in a block, you play Monopoly, you watch TV. You maybe go to church, you may go to NA, you may go to NA, but it's usually for just to get out of the cell. In the state prison system, there's a lot of programs, there's a lot of services. Do we need to send people to prison in order to get the help they need? Or is Mr. Mantelow talking about on the local level? Because they're not there. Now, what I do see is this. This is what I do see. In 2022, there was amendments made to bail reform. And it addressed some of these issues that we're talking about. The problem that we have is accountability. Who holds the local prosecutor, especially when you're in a community where everybody that runs things on one side of the political aisle, you have all Republicans on one side, and they're all saying we oppose. When changes happen, who's going to be there to make sure that they're following those changes and not just saying we're going to stick to
the
old way?
What you're implying is a pretty significant allegation, which is that there was amendments to bail reform in 2022, and you're implying that the Republican leadership in Wayne County especially has ignored it.
Well, from the looks of things, I'm not saying they have it all the way, but I'm saying we're having a debate about is bail reform and catch and release and so forth. Well, catch and release was addressed in 2022. So why are we still having the issue?
One thing that listen, we could probably do bail reform for an hour here or for five. But I do want to ask both of you about one specific aspect of criminal justice reform or attempts at doing things differently. And that's in Monroe County, it's called the JEDS program. It's a juvenile diversion program that is really specifically aimed at car thefts. So Assemblyman Mangalow brought up, you know, a high profile case in which a stolen vehicle, I don't remember how old. I mean, young. A lot of these, the people stealing cars are very young, 12, 13, 14, 15. And JEDS was created to try to intervene much more quickly, so you don't just give an appearance ticket, to try to assign an officer directly from the system to work with somebody and to try to get them to understand that person, to get them on a different path, as opposed to just, you know, nothing happens for 7 weeks or you're going straight to incarceration. And the people who are running that program tell us, and this is their data, so, you know, I trust it's true, that they've seen a drop in car thefts in Monroe County about 61% September to September, 23 to 24. And that they really believe that recidivism is down in the single digits for people who go in the JEDS program. So is that an example, as someone in Mangtalo, of a different kind of intervention? Do you support JEDS? Do you think we should be doing more approaches like that with youth offense, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we're talking about. And one of the key things here, you're talking about Monroe County, and I know Mr. Schuller talked about, you know, the individuals that were in Albany around that table. I'd like to know how many individuals around that table were from some of the rural areas, because this is what I'm talking about. Doing that helps the program, helps these young people. And I see that. I know that can happen. And I would absolutely, we do support that. And one of the biggest issues, as I said, in New York State is when we pass laws in New York State, it's one size fits all for the whole state. Well, every single area is different. Wayne County is much different than Monroe County. Monroe County is different than Albany County.
Or New York City.
Or New York City. And a lot of these laws are pushed by the New York City legislators. And which work great for New York City, but not for our area up here. And that's the things that we're talking about. We need to have a regional approach where the players are at the table. And when we talk about having these task force or these meetings in Albany, they are very scripted. There are only certain people get invited to those meetings. And I'd like to know how many judges in my district, how many police officers, how many sheriffs, how many DAs, public defenders were at the table in Albany, because I don't know of any.
James? Well, is that a fair criticism, concern?
I would say it's a fair criticism, but I would like to point out one thing. I was a member of the Finger Lakes Juvenile Justice Task Force. At that time, it was created by Governor Cuomo, and I started going with the Wayne County Sheriff at the time and a mental health professional and an individual involved in schools. As time went on, they all stopped coming. I was there by myself. And I kept going and I kept going. I was there until the state dissolved the whole Juvenile Justice Task Force. And it became a time where I'm the only one at the table. So a lot of times the issue isn't we don't have people locally at the table. It's the issue mainly is that they won't come. They just won't come. Why? I don't have an answer for that. But they're not. I sit at a lot of tables, and I don't see the people from Wayne County at those tables.
All right. So both candidates, though, support the programs like the JEDS
yes,
program.
Yes.
But with bail reform, Assemblyman Mangtalo wants to see essentially repeal or big changes to bail reform. Right. You seem, James, like you're more comfortable with where we are with it.
I think we need more accountability to make sure that the laws that's actually on the books are being followed. And that our pretrial release is actually doing what it's supposed to be doing. And not saying that they're not doing 100%, but if these issues are still going on, it's still happening, we need to look at, okay, where is accountability? Are we just asking for accountability from the citizen and not from the system? Or are we going to ask the system to hold itself accountable sometime as to how it follows the laws that's put in place? And if I may,
sure.
I want to make sure, I want to make a clear distinction here, because this is one thing that's been aggravating me ever since I've been hearing it and beyond this show. When we're talking about bail reform and young people, bail reform didn't affect young people. Penn's reform affected Penn's young people. It was the raise the age and Penn's. We became aligned. Once upon a time, New York State was one of two states that tried 16-year-olds as adults. One of two states, and we came in line with all the other states in the country to raise the age to 18, accountability to 18. And now what's happened is when bail reform happened, let's take Wayne County, when bail reform happened, prior to bail reform happening, we remodeled the jail. We created what they call cap court. And when Penn's reforms came, we did nothing. Now we're trying to figure out when a young person commits a crime or JD offense, where do we house them at? Where do we put them at? What do we do with them? And that's where the issue is with the young people is where do you do when they violate the laws and the rules? How do you get them off the streets for a minute and get them into these services that they need when those places are not there? So we got to remember that bail reform affected adults over 18. The young people, the laws were Penn's reform. Let's keep it in the proper perspective.
All right, let's just spend the last 90 seconds dividing that in half and asking both the candidates what they want to leave with listeners here. Republican Brian Mankula is running for a fourth term. Got about 45 seconds. What do you want to leave with listeners here?
So, Evan, what I'd really like to leave is, you know, we can sit here and discuss Albany all we want. We know what happens in Albany with the experience and dedication and understanding that I have, knowing how the game is really played. We can sit here and say, this is the way it's going to happen. This is the way it is happening. But in Albany, this is the way it actually does happening. It does happen. And having that experience and the knowledge to work on both sides of the aisle right now, especially in today's world, is so vital. And I said this from day one to everybody that wants to get involved in politics. Start at the local level. Understand what's going on at the home level, whether it's a town, a village, or a county, before you work up into the state level. You need to have that experience and understanding and knowing what's important to those local residents back home.
About 45 seconds, James Shuler, the floor is yours.
Well, I'll start off with something I say to young people all the time. If nothing changes, nothing changes. When we look at the conditions that we have in our community right now, since 1966, we have been doing the same thing. We have been voting party lines. We have been voting party lines. We have been voting party lines since 1966. And in our district, things have not gotten much better. The very town that Assembly Mantelo was a supervisor for, they defunded their village. They got rid of their village and defunded the police. And now in that community, crime is really a big issue. Homelessness is a big issue. We have a lot of issues going on in that very community right now, where social media is really going rampant with that.
Let me just say, to be fair, what's going on in Lyons is a whole separate conversation for a separate hour. Maybe you want to come back and we'll talk about that sometime.
I'd love to. I'd like to set the record straight, because we definitely did not defund the police.
Okay.
Yes, you did.
Pardon me? Gentlemen, I want to say this. I don't have a lot of candidates who are opposing each other who come on together, even when it is sometimes tough. And it is a credit to both of you being here today. Brian Mankula, the Republican in District number 130 for the New York State Assembly, thank you for being here, sir.
Thank you, Evan.
James Shuler, the Democrat, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
More Connections coming up in a moment.